I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. Al Schmidt was Philadelphia City Commissioner for 10 years, the sole Republican on a committee whose job it is to ensure election integrity. Last year, he faced death threats and harassment, including attacks from then-President Trump for upholding the city's 2020 presidential election results, which gave Pennsylvania and its key electoral votes to Biden, clinching his win. Schmidt testified before the U.S. Senate Committee on Rules and Administration this past October about the two biggest threats he sees facing the republic: the risk of election subversion and attacks on election officials. Al Schmidt is the brand new CEO of the Committee of 70. That's an election watchdog organization here in Philadelphia. And we asked him to join us on Radio Times today as we mark the first anniversary of the January 6th insurrection, which, of course, happened later this week. Al Schmidt, nice to have you back with us on the show.
Thank you, Marty.
You're very welcome, and I should say joining us by Skype. It has been more than a year, and I don't want to relive the death threats that you and, frankly, your family received, but have they died down?
They did. Soon after the president's inauguration, the only troubling thing is that they sort of begin again whenever there is all this chatter about auditing Pennsylvania election results or questions about Pennsylvania election results. And I would add that there was the most transparent and secure election in the history of Philadelphia, and that they've already been audited twice. But whenever that chatter returns, the threats return.
And how about when you're on radio shows? Does that happen too?
Well,
I mean, I ask that with some concern, frankly, for your safety and your family's safety.
There's even the former president's first tweet attacking me was a result of an interview I gave on CNN. So whenever I, as an elected former election official, or others in the country have stood up for the integrity of our system, strangely, or I guess unsurprisingly still, that's when the attacks resume.
Well, we are talking about more than a year after the election, but in the face of all the court rulings, and there were multiple rulings that went against the former president, you've got electors who certified the election results. There was a vote in the House of Representatives in spite of the attack on the U.S. Capitol. The Supreme Court justice swore in Joe Biden, and yet we are still seeing a majority of Republicans do not see Joe Biden as a legitimate president. How do you understand that?
Well, I think it's difficult to understand. It's difficult to comprehend because there's really, as you know, no evidence, actual evidence, suggesting otherwise. And I think that's the real danger here. When we have a large number of people, possibly a majority of one of our only two major parties in America, embracing ideas that are anti-democratic, and believing that the current president is illegitimate and not legitimately elected, that's a real danger, I think, to our whole system of government and our democracy.
How hard is it to commit voter fraud? And I should say, I'll be talking with Mark Bowden about actually a study in the AP. They looked at six battleground states where there was any question about voter fraud. I think they found a little more than 400, I'm underscoring that, cases of voter fraud. And a lot of it is just people getting confused or mixed up. But how rare is it to commit voter fraud, especially in Pennsylvania?
It is both very rare and very easy to detect. I got elected in 2011 as a Republican commissioner, election commissioner in Philadelphia, to combat voter fraud, among other things. We made referrals every year to law enforcement at the federal, state, and local level. They conducted investigations and, when warranted, indicted people involved in voter fraud. When it does occur, and it occurs rarely, it involves a handful of votes that would have, in no cases that we saw, affected the outcome of any race, at least in the last 10 years. That doesn't mean that people shouldn't be vigilant in combating it. We should. Every vote is important, and every case of voter fraud, as rare as they are, or voting irregularity, should be taken seriously, investigated, and, like I said, when warranted, prosecuted. And the federal, state, and law, federal, state, and local law enforcement have taken it seriously, and I'm grateful for that.
The Republican legislature in Harrisburg approved mail-in ballots. This was before the pandemic. And then, of course, in the middle of the pandemic, many, many people in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania did mail-in balloting. It was all, you know, it's all above board. But I wonder to you, Al Schmidt, how much you think that sort of added to this sense that something was afoot when it came to election fraud?
I think we were very fortunate that the that Harrisburg, with a Republican House and a Republican Senate and a Democratic governor, passed voting by mail in 2019, and that we were able to implement it in 2020. That ended up coinciding with what occurred with COVID, and our voters embraced it. About right out of the gate, about half of the voters in the presidential primary in 2020 and about half of the voters in the presidential general election of 2020 voted by mail. And many of them potentially would not have voted because of concerns about COVID, or, you know, we had to consolidate our polling places because of losing election board workers that were unwilling or couldn't work, or facilities that usually are polling places that we had to close because of COVID. That being said, while it's very fortunate that we had voting by mail, it definitely opened the door to a lot of these sort of conspiracy theories and other things because it was new. And our voters are used to knowing, or think they know, what the results are on election night. And it only sort of continues when you had a handful of absentee ballots still outstanding to count, and elections were very, very close. When you have half of your voters voting by mail, every election is theoretically close on election night because you can't count more than 300,000 mail-in ballots on election day alone. It takes a little bit of time. And I think the former president and his sort of allies in all of this sort of exploited that new system of voting, or exploited the lack of understanding about it, exploited the fact that voters are not used to having to wait a couple of days until all the votes are counted. They're used to thinking they know what the results are on election night.
And in those couple of days while you're waiting for results, that's where conspiracy theories can take hold.
They really did. And pretty far-fetched ones, like South Philly organized crime figure trucking in fraudulent ballots from China, and just all sorts of craziness that, you know, if you saw this movie, you'd probably walk out of the theater. And yet a lot of people believed it. And we even had a couple, as you might recall, knuckleheads come up from, I think it was Virginia, with guns, with lockpick tools, with other materials to prevent some fictitious truckload of fake ballots coming to the convention center where our election operations were consolidated. And they were arrested and are being prosecuted. And then those same people were active on Capitol Hill on January 6th. And I think the January 6th thing is important because it's really where all of these threats and all of this talk manifested itself in a physical way, in physical violence. So there's a big difference between people just making threats, as bad as they are, and then people physically acting out on those, on being deceived about the election results.
Well, let me ask you about threats. And from your testimony, the Brennan Center and others have said something like 20% of election officials faced threats, maybe death threats, but certainly, you know, some level of harassment. What can be done to address that problem?
I think it's a couple of things. Better sharing of information and intelligence between the federal, state, and local levels, and also really prioritizing it. We have had a number of prosecutions from what occurred on January 6th.
Right.
And that's just from videos of people's faces and some communications on social media. With all of these threats that election officials have faced across the country, and I had a lot of them, and I had it bad, but I didn't have it worse. There were others who received more and went through a lot worse than I did. We haven't had any prosecutions for any of those cases that I'm aware of across the country.
So we need to do that. I mean, that's a bottom. We need to prosecute these people that threatened you and other election officials.
We do. And it's really not about me. It's about this whole system, right? When we have the whole point of these threats is to try to intimidate, to try to get election administrators to do or not do something that they would ordinarily do to uphold the integrity of the electoral process. The threats are intended to try to force them to do or not do something. And it's important that they be taken seriously and that people be held accountable for it, because at least in my experience, we've had all.
Oops, did we lose our? Okay, we lost him. We will get him back. That is Al Schmidt, and he was Philadelphia City Commissioner for 10 years. In fact, he's the brand new CEO. Okay, we do have the new he's the new CEO of the Committee of 70. Talking about the fact that he and other election officials, this of course is back in 2020, although continuing to today, have faced threats and harassment. And he testified just a couple of months ago before a Senate committee on rules and administration. And he talked about what to do about it. Al, you're back. We have about 30 seconds. If you can finish your thought, go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I mean, let me ask you a broad question, and you've got about 20 seconds. Do you fear for our democracy?
I do. You know, I have a PhD in history by background, and when you look at history, it's very rare that people, I think, realize in the moment that they're at an important juncture. And we are at that important juncture right now. And we can go down one of two roads. And one is to strengthen our democracy. And the other is to tragically walk away from it for no good reason whatsoever.
Well, I'm sorry we lost you. I'm glad we got you back. And I'm glad you're now the new CEO of the Committee of 70. And I'm glad you joined us on Radio Times. Al Schmidt, thanks so much. And good luck.
Thank you, Marty.
Yeah, and stay safe. You're very welcome. And we've got Waiting in the Wings, Mark Bowden. He's got a new book co-authored with Matthew Teague called The Steal. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Well, this week marks the first anniversary of the assault on the U.S. Capitol and the attempt to subvert the results of the 2020 presidential election. 1 year later, and the crisis remains. Former President Trump still claims he's the winner of the election, which is false and unprecedented, and most Republicans agree with him. One-third of Americans believe that violence against the government can be justified at times, and only one-third of Americans believe our democracy is secure. That's according to some recent polls. Our guest, Mark Bowden, is co-author with Matthew Teague of a new book called The Steal. It's a week-by-week attempt by Trump and his allies to overturn the results of the presidential election in key battleground states, including Pennsylvania. They also profile local officials who risk their reputations and, in some cases, their lives to uphold the legitimate results. Mark Bowden is a journalist, a contributor to The Atlantic, author of many books, most of which he has talked about on Radio Times. And Mark Bowden, nice to have you back with us on the show.
Thank you, Marty. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to have you, and we have a lot to talk about. Let me just make sure our listeners can join us. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Mark, have we ever had a president who has refused to accept the results of an election and gone on to spread lies and misinformation about election fraud?
Not to my knowledge, Marty. I mean, I know there have been angry and disappointed presidents in the past. We know that Theodore Roosevelt formed his own party and ran again. But I don't know of another president who claimed that he was falsely unelected.
And had so many of members of his party believe him.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's a consequence, frankly, of, in part, Donald Trump's efforts over many years to sow distrust, not just in elections, but in expertise of any kind, in the media or whatever. And then also these propaganda networks that basically provide a megaphone for these, for these conspiracy theories.
Well, even well before the November 2020 election, he was talking about, meaning former President Trump, was talking about voter fraud.
That's right. He was even talking about it after he won. I think he was shocked that he won, but then he turned his criticism to the fact that he had won in the Electoral College but had not won the popular vote. So he never stopped beating the drum for his belief that there's something fundamentally wrong with our election system in this country.
So that was both 2016 and 2020.
That's right. I mean, he started doing this and even before he was elected president, and then he continued doing it after. He set up a commission to find evidence of fraud. And even after it found nothing and was disbanded, he still continued to make the same claims. And I think right up until election night in 2020, he was telling his supporters that the only way he could lose was through widespread fraud.
Well, I do want to talk about Pennsylvania, but before we get to some of the people that you profile in this state, talk to us, and you do write about how difficult it is to actually commit wide-scale voter fraud, the kind of wide-scale fraud that Trump is alleging.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really stretches credulity to believe that something like that could happen. And we don't run elections in America out of a federal agency in Washington. Elections are held and run by your neighbors and mine all over the country. Every county, you know, has its own rules, has its own machines, has its own workers. So to contemplate somehow organizing, it would have to involve thousands of people spread all over America who were willing to falsify an election result. It really, you know, stretches credulity. And I should add, Marty, that today, any widespread fraud, even any small fraud, and as I think your previous guest, Al, pointed out, is glaringly obvious. I mean, we know election patterns in this country down to individual neighborhoods with a fair degree of certainty, which is why legislators draw these weird gerrymandered maps, because they're reaching out to grab neighborhoods that they know will go Republican or Democrat. So if you had suddenly a huge switch of votes from Republican to Democrat, it would show up immediately in the data. And it's just something that would, first of all, be really, really hard to do, and secondly, would be obvious if it happened.
Well, and I mentioned this AP survey to Al Schmidt. This was December 14th when it was published. It looked at six states, including Pennsylvania, reviewed every potential case of voter fraud, found fewer than 475 cases. So 0.15% of these votes were questionable. It's not even clear it was fraud.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it happens in every election. There's hardly ever an instance where there's significant fraud significant enough to change even the outcome of a local election. I mean, the Heritage Foundation, which is a conservative think tank, has been tracking voter fraud for 50 years. And you can go online and they itemize every instance of it in modern times. And there's not a single instance where the number of votes being switched would have changed the outcome of a major election. And also, Republicans are just as guilty of it as Democrats.
Let me read a couple of comments, and then we'll talk about Delaware County in Pennsylvania. Jim tweets, so bottom line, Republicans think that only Democrats voted illegally in 2020 to the tune of more than 7 million people, as if Democrats were inherently crooked, Republicans not. Does that make any sense? Does that make any sense to you, Mark Bowden?
Well, it does make sense only if you are, so extreme in your beliefs that you distrust the integrity of people who disagree with you. And I think that's, in fact, the heart of the problem. And, you know, the Republicans who were challenging the result of the 2020 election in many instances were just unwilling to believe that their neighbors, who were Democrats, would be willing to run an honest election, even though the election in four years earlier had elected Trump.
So trust is, I mean, obviously, as you write, and as I think we should all know, trust is really at the heart of our electoral system and of our democracy.
That's right. I mean, you can't have a democracy unless you accept the principle of majority rule. And the only way to determine majority rule is to hold an election. So if you begin to distrust that elections are being held fairly or that the other party is interested in the integrity of the system, then you refuse to accept the results of elections, you refuse to accept majority rule, and you no longer have democracy.
That is Mark Bowden. He is co-author with Matthew Teague of a brand new book just published today. It's called The Steal, The Attempt to Overturn the 2020 Election and the People Who Stopped It. He and his co-author look at five states, including Pennsylvania, and efforts in these states to subvert the election results and, frankly, the election officials who stood up for the truth and for voter integrity. Mark, let's look at Delaware County, which is just outside of Philadelphia. You profile a woman named Leah Hoops. This is Bethel Township. She's a Trump supporter. She started a group called Pennsylvania State Watchdogs. Who's Leah Hoops?
Leah is a woman from Chad's Ford who became a political activist, really, during the Trump years. And, you know, she posts on Facebook five, six times a day. She has a fairly small following on Facebook. And she created this little group, which consisted really of her and a handful of other people who were convinced going into the election that there would be widespread fraud, and then who sort of set out on election day to confirm what they already believed.
And what did she think was going on?
Well, I think that the allegation that she and her cohort, Greg Stenstrom, made in essence was that in Delaware County, as many as 70 to 100,000 fake Biden ballots had been printed up and were inserted into the count. This is pure fantasy. It would be virtually impossible to do that. And even if it did happen, as I've said earlier, it would be so glaringly obvious. I mean, that number of votes represents about a third sure. to a half of all the votes cast in Delaware County. And in fact, in Delaware County in 2020, Trump got more votes than he did in the, you know, 4 years earlier. It's just that Biden outperformed him. And in fact, none of the Republicans who went into that election really expected that Trump was somehow going to win there. So if there had been that large a shift in votes, it would have completely upset the normal voting patterns, and it would be glaringly obvious.
Well, it seems, as you write, that every even small glitch or, you know, sort of observation that sort of didn't add up was seen as evidence of something nefarious. Do I have that right?
Yes, that's right. I think if you go into your observation with the assumption that you're going to find fraud, you find it. I mean, Leah Hoops, for instance, went to her local precinct that morning, and the poll workers were having problems with the new machines. They had a batch of ballots that were not scanning properly. They eventually got new ballots and tried to straighten it out. But to her eye, you know, these people had been set up by the county election officials. They had deliberately, in the way she put it, sent incompetent people so that the vote count in her precinct would somehow be compromised. And there's no evidence that's true, but that's what she concluded from that.
And there were questions about observers. I mean, that there were observers, but there were questions that they weren't, you know, given the kind of access that some of these Trump supporters believe they should have.
Yeah, I think the thing you need to know about the Delaware County situation is that it really involves these two folks, Leah Hoops and Greg Stentrum. And they're not just at odds with Democrats in Delco. They're at odds with Republicans and even with the Trumpist faction of the Republican Party in their own county. So they're outliers. And what happened on Election Day was that they had been given authorization to observe at the polls. But because Delaware County has hundreds of polling places, there are literally hundreds of observers, it wouldn't be practical for all of them to show up at the same place. So they were all given authorization to observe at various precincts around the county. And what they did was they went to the main counting center where, in fact, Republicans had been authorized to observe. It's just that Leah Hoops and Greg Stentrum had not. And so they took that when they encountered resistance in getting into the counting center as evidence that Democrats were not allowing Republicans, which was just not true, to observe the count.
Well, let me quote something that you write in the book, and this is from the perspective of these two people that you mentioned. The Steele, S-T-E-A-L, revealed that we lived in a uniparty state. This suggested that at least in their corner of Pennsylvania, every vote, every government policy, every appointment, every government contract was prearranged, and that in essence, everyone in a position of power was corrupt, all being paid. I mean, that is the, I will say, paranoid, but conspiracy-driven view of this election.
That's right. That's what they believed. And when, you know, every little thing that they saw at the election center, you know, basically confirmed what they suspected. So, you know, it isn't that unusual, Marty, that these people exist and that they hold these extreme opinions. What is remarkable is that Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani seized upon Leah Hoops and Greg Stentrum and people like them throughout the country in order to, you know, marshal what they called evidence that the vote had been fraudulent on a large scale. So these folks who ordinarily would be, you know, kind of a pain in the butt to their neighbors and to the county suddenly became the prime actors in this major effort to claim that the national election was fraudulent.
Well, in fact, you say about Giuliani, and, you know, he left his mark here in Philadelphia with a number of really outlandish public appearances, but that he took all comers. I mean, if you had a outlandish belief about the electoral system, he would take it seriously, or he would at least, you know, be willing to say it publicly.
That's right. I think that was a very cynical thing on his part, and I think on Donald Trump's part. They were employing what I call the blunderbuss strategy, which is, you know, blunderbuss was a colonial era precursor to the shotgun, which wasn't very accurate, but it blasted a lot of shot. With Trump's claims of fraud, it didn't matter so much what the specific allegations were, only that there were a lot of them. So if you have enough allegations of fraud, you get to the point where even rational people begin to think, well, if there's so many claims of fraud, there must be something real there. So they would seize upon, say, when we write about this in the book, a woman in Arizona who saw the signature of Satan in the voting spreadsheets. And, you know, Greg Stenstrom in Pennsylvania, who claimed there are all these fake ballots that had been injected into the account. These things are easily disproved. But the idea is to create such a cloud of suspicion that it begins to undermine belief in the whole system.
Well, and just to underscore what you're saying there, I mean, courts, just about every court that I'm aware of, you know, ruled against Trump and these various allegations of voter fraud. In some cases, judges really excoriating these lawyers who were making these outlandish claims. But it does raise a question about, you know, how facts and even legal decisions seem to be no match for people's paranoid conspiracy beliefs and theories. How do you understand that?
I think that's human nature. I think it's always been true, Marty, that certain people, in fact, perhaps even most people, don't form their opinions or beliefs on the basis of a calm consideration of the facts, nor are they very likely to change their mind when you point out, you know, that's something that they're arguing is false. I think many people base their beliefs on a feeling as opposed to any really, you know, careful weighing of the facts. I think this has always been true. I think what's different about today is that we have the internet to essentially allow communities to form around these conspiracy theories. And we have whole TV networks basically devoted to propaganda, which just elevate conspiracy theories to legitimate things. And so what you end up with are, you know, large factions of the population who are being motivated by not what's true, but what they prefer to believe is true.
And that is Mark Bowden, our guest on Radio Times today. He's a journalist, contributor to The Atlantic, and author of, or I should say co-author of, a new book called The Steal, The Attempt to Overturn the 2020 Election and the People Who Stopped It. We got a lot of questions and comments here that I do want to read after this very short break. And I do want to talk about what happened in Erie, Pennsylvania, back in 2020. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at @WHYYRadioTimes. And you can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe, and we're talking about how the days leading up to the January 6th insurrection laid the groundwork for the assault and the local officials who helped to save our democracy. We began with former Philadelphia City Commissioner Republican Al Schmidt, who faced death threats along with his family for upholding the election results here in Philadelphia. We're talking now with writer Mark Bowden, co-author of The Steal, The Attempt to Overturn the 2020 Election and the People Who Stopped It. Let me just read some comments here. I'll just sort of put them out there, and then we can talk a little bit about Erie, Pennsylvania. Diane says, what about our Pennsylvania legislators, such as Senator Bob Mensch, immediately after the election, calling it worse than a third world country to his constituents without any evidence? Also, John says the insurgency was created by a bunch of angry people. We should be concerned for them. It was not just Trump. PJ say wonders whether a significant number of Trump voters were first-time or second-time voters in presidential elections, having been drawn to the polls by Trump. And we have other questions as well that I will put out there. But, Mark, let me talk to you a little bit about what happened in Erie, Pennsylvania. This was a lie about mail-in ballots. It became a national conspiracy and it involved the postmaster, Rob Weisenbach. What happened?
Well, what happened was one of the workers at that post office made a claim that the postmaster, Rob Weisenbach, had conspired to hold ballots cast for Biden too late and make sure that they were, you know, mailed in and counted. It turned out the person who made the allegation, Richard Hopkins, had his story amplified by Project Veritas, which is an organization, a right-wing organization that promulgates a lot of crazy stories to support their point of view. And that became one of these claims of fraudulent activity that Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump seized upon to throw into their mix of allegations that there had been fraud. It turns out that they were completely baseless, these claims. Weisenbach, who was harassed and threatened and insulted, basically had his life turned upside down. Hopkins later recanted the whole story and then recanted his recantation. So it gets to be pretty hard to figure out. But it turns out actually that the number of votes that were claimed to have been involved were so insignificant that they couldn't have even been a factor, even in just Erie.
Do we know how Weisenbach and his family are doing today?
I don't. I know that Weisenbach has sued Project Veritas and Richard Hopkins, who made the claim against him. And so I guess, you know, they're hoping to get something out of all this.
I mentioned this to Al Schmidt about the fact that in Pennsylvania, we had what was called no excuse mail-in balloting. So if you wanted to vote by mail, you could. You didn't need an excuse. You write about this in your book, Mark, saying that because it was new and sort of not the sort of regular way that people voted in the Commonwealth, that that raised some questions.
Yeah, I think that the fact that the pandemic created a situation where so many people would have been afraid to vote at their polling place. Republicans as well as Democrats all over the country authorized widespread mail-in voting. And that meant that, I mean, mail voting in the past has always just been people who are in the military service and who are away from home, or people who are too ill or traveling and can't get to the polling place. It gave them a chance to vote. And that in the past meant that on election night at the counting center in each precinct, they would have a handful of mail-in ballots that they would inspect and count. That in 2020, because of the pandemic, there were literally hundreds of thousands of mail-in votes. And in Delaware County, it was a third to a half of all votes cast. And so the old practice of sitting around the table and opening them up and inspecting them and counting them was no longer practical. And so what had to happen was that counties like Delaware County invested in machines that are capable of counting these mail-in ballots very rapidly. And, you know, this was the heart of the Republican complaint that they were being denied access to inspecting the ballots on election night. In fact, it would be impossible and impractical to inspect every mail-in ballot unless you decided to spend several years going through the vote, in which case you'd be ready for the next election.
Well, and this was passed by the Republican legislature, this idea of no-excuse mail-in balloting, but also that they had to wait until Election Day before beginning the count, which, as I was talking with Al Schmidt about, created a couple of days where, you know, conspiracy theories can really take off.
That's right. I mean, I think, as Al pointed out, because a relatively small number of ballots are counted on election night, every election looks close on election night. And then what happened was that Trump and his Republican allies, some of them, began claiming that mail-in ballots would somehow be inherently fraudulent. Many Republicans decided not to vote by mail. And that meant, and many, you know, observers accurately predicted, that a vast majority of the mail-in ballots in 2020 would be Democratic voters. And that, in fact, was the case. So what you saw happening was Trump with a lead in many places around the country on election night. And then as the mail-in ballots started to be counted, that lead vanished and the number of votes for Biden increased dramatically.
Yeah, to about 80,000. A couple of questions. Kathy says, what exactly do poll observers do? Can they look at individual ballots? But also an email from Terry. I've taken the training and worked the polls many times. If any of the people who make these crazy fraudulent allegations had done what they had done, they would know their claims are impossible. Any thoughts about that, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, it's the very idea that somehow every ballot is carefully inspected is really impractical. What happens is in a polling place is that voters walk in, their name is checked that they're a valid voter for that precinct, and they go and they cast their vote, and it's scanned into a machine which is counted electronically, and the paper ballots are saved as a backup. And the only reason that you would ever go in and begin to carefully inspect all the ballots is if somehow there was a red flag,
yeah,
that the voting count was way off. And that happened in Antrim County, Michigan, where a typically Republican precinct had suddenly a huge number of votes for Biden. It turned out that the county clerk had made a mistake and had accidentally transferred 3,000 Trump votes into the Biden column. And so she immediately, or within a day, realized that she'd made a mistake and confessed it openly. But it was seized upon by Trump and his allies as, again, evidence that there was some massive fraudulent effort undertaken. So there were these lawyers for the Trump campaign flying in on private jets trying to convince this county clerk, Cheryl Guy, to change her story, to say that no, she hadn't made a mistake, that the machines had switched the vote. So, I mean, but I think the larger point of that is that was 3,000 votes in one little county in Michigan. And it went all over the world that those 3,000 votes went in the wrong column. So the idea that somehow millions of votes, which is what it would take, would be switched fraudulently without anybody noticing, without it becoming glaringly obvious, is laughable to anybody who knows how elections are actually run.
Let me read some more comments from our listeners. Jerry emailed, could you explore the fact that Democrats also argued that Trump was not legitimately elected because he colluded with the Russians? Have you looked at that, Mark?
Yes, you know, we do talk about that, and it's true. And I think it speaks to the fact that people, when they lose an election, when their candidate loses, are disappointed. And those who are the most dramatically disappointed very frequently claim that there was something wrong with the election. In the case of Donald Trump's victory, there weren't too many claims, to my knowledge, that the electoral system, the election system itself, had been rigged. There was more complaint directed at the way we count votes in America, which is through the Electoral College. Because if you recall, you know, Trump lost the popular vote, but won the presidency because of the votes in the Electoral College. So there was a kind of a movement among Democrats to do away with the Electoral College, which has its merits and also I think there's some problems with trying to do that. But that sentiment is always present.
Well, and I'm also thinking, though, that the Trump talking about Russia, if you're listening, I'm thinking of all the quotes when he was running for president the first time and also when he was president, that certainly raised some questions about his association with Putin and other Russian oligarchs.
Yeah, there were, and those were, in many cases, legitimate questions, and they were investigated by the Mueller report. Yeah. But I think that, the bigger point here is that these were complaints about the way Trump had conducted his campaign. They weren't complaints that the American voting system had been sabotaged. And, you know, there was no evidence of that. And to my knowledge, there were no serious claims that that's what happened.
Here's an email from Patty who says, I'm alarmed for the future of our country. People I thought I knew have social media posts that are just deranged. I've been called an idiot and a sheeple. Trump is not a cause. He's a symptom of forces and behaviors that have been taking place for years and are now in the open. They do this proudly and defiantly. It frightens me most of all. Are you frightened for our democracy, Mark Bowden?
Yeah, I think we should be alarmed. that this very anti-democratic authoritarian movement is sort of up and moving. I actually came away from my research in this book more optimistic than many of my liberal friends, because you see that elections are really conducted by ordinary people, by your neighbors and mine. Mm-hmm. And I think that the American people are not as fundamentally dishonest as Donald Trump. I think that, in fact, you know, there, you hear about a lot of these Trumpists or extremist Republicans running for school board or running for, you know, these local election offices. I think, first of all, they're entitled to run. That's sure. America.
Sure.
And if they actually end up in those positions of responsibility, unless they are at heart really dishonest, they're going to learn how the system is actually run. And they're going to have to actually deal with the practicalities of collecting and counting all the votes. And my sense is that most people entrusted with that responsibility, no matter what their political beliefs, are going to behave honestly. Some won't, but I think most will.
What though, and I put this to Al Schmidt earlier in the hour, what though should be done to people who threaten election officials? And according to the Brennan Center, something like 20% of election officials face some form of threat and harassment.
It's a real problem. And I think people who make those kind of threats should be held accountable. I don't know what the penalty is. I think if you threaten violence against someone, you've probably broken a law and you could be prosecuted. So the fact that, as he pointed out, no one has been is troubling. I think that people should be held accountable for harassing, you know, their fellow citizens who are trying to, you know, do their public duty by taking on these, in some cases, no pay jobs, you know, in order to serve their country. So it ought to be a crime. And if people commit crimes, they should be prosecuted for it.
Here's a comment from David. Since you believe people don't change their minds, what do you propose we do to restore trust in the system that is based, that is the basis of our rather fragile democracy? And you do right, Mark Bowden, about, you know, trust is really the essential ingredient in our democracy.
Yeah, I don't know what can be done about it other than, you know, each of us can do, you know, what we can. What I've done is write a book about what happened and why, and tried to explain exactly, you know, how things work and why it would be impossible to do the kind of things that have been alleged. But, I mean, I think this is a great problem of modern times, the amplification of every crackpot notion out there, so that anybody's idea competes with, you know, the most valid data-driven analysis that an expert can provide. So I think, you know, one of the great challenges of modern life is to sort through the sort of ocean of information that floods at us every day and figure out what to believe. And so I when I taught at the University of Delaware, we wanted to make this a priority for every student who graduated, that they have a degree of media literacy, because I think it's tremendously important to navigate the modern world.
Well, we're almost out of time here, but I'm just curious, when you see the video of the people attacking the U.S. Capitol almost a year ago, do you see them as true believers?
I think, yeah, they're true believers in what they believe. It was a shameful and outrageous episode, you know, but I actually have a different take on it, Marty, than many people. I see the riot in Washington as a last desperate act by a president whose efforts to overturn the election had failed in every one of the six key states. Every lawsuit that they filed failed. Every effort that they made to convince legislators not to certify the actual election results failed. And so it was an act of desperation, which I think, as I wrote in the book, had no more chance of overturning the American government than the hippies had in 1967 to levitate the Pentagon. A tremendous amount of attention is being focused on it because it's very dramatic and sure. terrible, and I think the people involved should be prosecuted. But I don't think that's where the real problem lay. I think the problem was what we write about, is what happened in the six swing states.
Well, I sure hope so. And Mark Bowden, as always, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
It's been a pleasure, Marty. Thank you.
You're very welcome. He's a journalist contributor to The Atlantic and co-author of a brand new book, The Steal, The Attempt to Overturn the 2020 Election and the People Who Stopped It. Go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under Programs, and you can always download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray-Bessler. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you for joining us.